Hi, everybody. This is Jennifer Sneeden. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm the founder of Thriving Therapy Practice. Thanks for stopping by to get the extended version of my book, Building a Six-Figure Private Practice, The Magic Formula for Psychotherapists. I'm excited that you're here because with the book, there's only so much that I could include. And what I'm going to do in this audio recording is expand on some of my ideas. As I said in the book, the formula that I'm sharing with you is not something that came easily to me by any means. It actually came out of desperation because I was right on the verge of deciding I was never going to have a successful practice when I realized that whether I could or whether I couldn't was the wrong question. And I needed to start asking myself, how can I have a successful private practice? If I was committed to this, if this was my dream, instead of wondering if I could make it happen, I needed to start wondering how I could make it happen. And this book is a result of everything that I learned. When I shifted that question, it shifted so much for me in terms of my mindset. And I'm very excited about what I've learned. And I'm excited to share that with you here today. This is really for people that are asking, what does it take to earn $100,000 a year or more in private practice? And there's a lot of you, those that work for agencies, or especially those that are kind of stuck in that managed care mentality, you're probably wondering whether it's even possible. And I can tell you absolutely from personal experience, as well as from therapists that I've worked with all over the country, the answer is yes. This isn't something that works for one particular person. It's not something that works for one particular niche. It's not something that works in one particular area. So it doesn't matter if you live in Boise or LA, or if you're a social worker or a psychologist. These are the same success principles. This formula works regardless of who you are, where you're located, or what you specialize in. People will again often ask me, what is the best way to attract new clients? And in some ways, this is an easy one, and in some ways, it's a hard one. There are so many good ways to attract new clients. There isn't one that's the best. They all depend on what your area of specialty is. And I don't think as a therapist you ever want to be dependent on one way to attract new clients. For instance, several years ago, many people were flooded with clients by doing pay-per-click advertising on Google. And then probably about, I would say, 3 years ago, that became incredibly competitive for a psychotherapist, and people could no longer count on Google to flood them with leads, and so they had to find different ways to get clients. People will often ask if they need a website or what type of online presence you need. You absolutely need an online presence. As many of you know, I believe that social media is far more valuable, and I talk about that a lot more on my website. So if you're interested in social media, it's something that I do a tremendous amount of work with, and visit my website, thrivingtherapypractice.com, to get more about that. You're also maybe wondering, what are some of the biggest mistakes that therapists make? I'm going to talk about that in here as well. So let's jump in and start talking about the magic formula. And I call this a magic formula very specifically because they're all interlocking pieces. It's not as though you can just have one of these and expect to be successful. You really can't even just have two or three of these. If you have two or three of them, you'll probably be doing okay, but to really take your success through the roof, you have to be balancing all four components of these. So what are the components? The first one is vision. Vision is what you imagine for yourself. What do you see your practice as? The next one is mindset. Mindset, we're going to talk a little bit more about because this is the one that's a little sneaky, quite frankly. Mindset is, do you belief that you can do this. It doesn't matter if you believe I can do it. It doesn't matter if you believe your supervisor can do it. It matters if you believe that you can do it. And many therapists I've found have mental barriers. Sometimes it's self-confidence, sometimes it's self-esteem, sometimes it's money issues, sometimes it's a sense of not valuing what they have to offer. But mindset is a biggie for a lot of you. The next one is skills. And skills is something that you probably often equate with clinical skills. We're not going to be talking about clinical skills in this program. And the reason for that is that I think you probably already have excellent clinical skills. If you were doubting your clinical skills, you probably would not have gone into private practice. So I'm not going to be going into clinical skills. There are so many wonderful resources out there for that. And of course, it's always important to stay on top of your clinical skills. But I think it's just as important and much more overlooked to think about your marketing and practice building skills. And then the fourth component is implementation. Implementation is where the rubber hits the road. I have one very close friend, actually, who is amazing with the quality of these really incredibly brilliant ideas she has. I know that every time I meet her, she's just going to blow me away with something that I think would be a revolutionary idea. And yet, none of them ever come to fruition. And without implementation, you can have all the amazing ideas, but nothing is going to come of it. And so to have the vision, to have the mindset, to have the skills, without the implementation, you're not going to accomplish any of those. How important is each of these? You know, they're all so inextricably intertwined that you just can't have one without the other. When I begin coaching with a therapist, the first thing that I'll do is have them fill out a detailed questionnaire for me, because I want to kind of assess each of them in these four areas so that I can spend our time where it's going to be the most highly leveraged. I know that a therapist doesn't want to coach with me for the next 5 years, that he or she wants to get really actionable information and move on with their practice. So I'm looking for where can we get the most leverage, the most return for your time. And often that's in the area where you're the weakest. To strengthen that weak area, just one area can often have a tremendous difference. So I'm going to be talking through each of these four areas. And as I do that, I want you to think about, where are you? Is this something that you're good at? Is this something you didn't even know existed? Is this something that you're working on? Because you need to understand what you're doing well today, what you can get better at, and what you really need to focus your time and energy on. So let's start with vision. This is that really big picture. Can you see it so clearly that you can almost taste it? I'm a hypnotherapist. I know many of you listening to this call will be either hypnotherapists or have had some hypnosis training. And one of the things that makes hypnosis so powerful is the use of vivid imagery, the ability to paint that picture in a very experiential way for our clients. And in that regard, we're actually creating a vision for them. And we're making that vision so real and so intense that it becomes true. And that's what I want you to do with your practice as well. So a vision can't be wishy-washy. It can't be kind of, sort of. It's got to be, this is the detailed picture that I have for my life. So in my own practice, my vision is to help parents overcome challenging behaviors so they can enjoy their children again. Now, I can tell you right offhand who I'm not going to be really serving. I'm not going to be serving people that aren't parents, right? Because that's not part of my vision. And so the vision is, who are you called to serve? Who are the people that you most want to make a difference for? That's a really essential component of your vision. And another piece of the vision is, how do you serve them? For instance, and many of you that have worked with me already know this, I operate a high-end practice. I'm not looking to serve a wide number of clients. I'm looking to serve a small number of high-end clients. I charge more than any other therapist that I know of in my marketplace, and I'm okay with that. A lot of clients will not come to me. I'm okay with that. I frankly don't want to see 30 clients a week. I see between 13 and 15. I've gone up to 17. That's too many for me. I want just a few clients. Now, I don't know that that's your vision. If that's your vision, wonderful. You and I are on the same page. Perhaps your vision is to spread your message through workshops, through seminars, through groups. Perhaps you are called to serve 30 clients a week, but understanding what that is for you. And the vision is also, how do you see your office? How do you see yourself dressed? You know, what's really useful here is to just sit with your eyes closed and play out the movie for yourself. What would an ideal day look like for you? For instance, I see this movie very clearly, and most days it is really what happens. I see myself waking up, having a relaxed morning, getting my kids off to school. The kids go to school. I have a little time to do yoga. I get ready. I go in. I see three clients. I'm done in time to pick my kids up from school, and I have a great afternoon with them. So I can clearly see the day. I can see myself sitting in the office with my clients. I can see myself at the park with the kids. I can just visualize the whole thing. So it's really easy for me to know that where I want my time to go. If I am getting distracted on Facebook, you get so many of these interruptions in the course of your day. If I'm getting interrupted by those, it's easy to get distracted. When I stay clear to my vision, I know exactly where I want to spend my time. I know exactly where I want to spend my energy, and there is no confusion. If this is new to you, you may not understand the importance of having a vision. And let me tell you that without a vision, you will get so scattered. I know that you're probably listening to this saying, "Yeah, but I can help more than parents. I can help. I can treat depression. I can treat people going through a divorce. I can treat people wanting to lose weight." And I get that. We are trained to treat a wide variety of people. However, we cannot effectively serve all of those people. In order to do really our highest good, we have to find out who are we called to serve. And the only way to really build a truly successful practice is to be a specialist, to be an expert in your field. You may have heard the expression, there's riches in niches. I can tell you, I've seen time and time again how true that is. I will often work with therapists that are so reluctant to carve out a niche for themselves because they're fearful of all of the people that they're going to be turning away. But the reality is, there's nobody to turn away today. They're not getting clients. They're not having people calling them because their marketing message tries to appeal to everyone. And as you try to appeal to everyone, you end up appealing to no one. You need to have a compelling message to a certain person or a certain group of people. Without that compelling message, you're watered down and nobody is going to feel like, okay, this is the person that really gets me. When you have a serious problem, you want the best. You want the person that knows exactly how to treat your condition. So, somebody that is suffering, let's say, from postpartum depression, doesn't want to go to a generalist. They want to go to somebody that specializes in treating postpartum depression. They want to know that the person they're seeing has the best training, has the most experience, and has a clearly defined expertise. So please think about that. And I can't say this emphatically enough. As a generalist, you are not going to take your practice to the level that you're envisioning for yourself. It's only by specializing that you're really going to break into that six-figure mark. And the experience time and time and time again supports this. I know it's counterintuitive, but please think about that, because it is just so very essential. And as you're thinking about it, ask yourself, what types of clients do I most enjoy working with? How do I most enjoy working? For some of us, it's individual sessions. Others are born to do public speaking. People enjoy groups, they enjoy workshops. I know many private practice therapists who do in-home work. And if you're working with couples or you're working with children, I think that's a beautiful idea because there's nothing like being in the home, in the setting to really get therapy doing some good. Another important question with your vision creation is, do I have access to these clients? This is where a lot of therapists get hung up. So if your calling is to work with people, let's say with social phobia, how are you going to connect with them? How are you going to reach out with them? To them. If your calling is to work with people that are trying to lose weight, how are you going to connect to them? How are you going to reach out to them? See, it doesn't matter if you have a great vision. If you can't find your ideal client, you're going to get stuck in this phase. So it has to be work that you love doing, and you have to have access to the clients that you are seeking. Next is, what do I have to offer that will appeal to these clients? I'll tell you, this is a really hard question for a lot of therapists because we're not good at identifying what it is we do, but it's important that you hear, you don't have to tell anybody about this, but just thinking through it, what makes you so good at doing this? If you want to specialize in postpartum depression, do you have personal experience in doing that? If you want to work with social phobia, have you helped, 14 clients already with that? What is it that makes you have something of real value? And then the even trickier question is the next one, the last one. What sets you apart from other therapists in my area? When I'm coaching with a therapist, I will say to them very often, what makes you the best person to call to handle my marital difficulties, to help me with my child with ADHD? And very often therapists are stumped by this. They can't answer the question. This isn't about belittling other therapists. It's not about putting yourself on a pedestal. It's about being realistic. What is it that you have to offer? Because if you don't feel confident that you have something of great value that makes you stand out, maybe this isn't really your vision. Or perhaps it's your vision, but you haven't done enough training in the area, the clinical area. So ask yourself, why should a client choose you? And if you can't really answer that, then you need to do a little bit more soul searching. So once you've gotten that rough idea, now it's time to put pencil to paper. And I really do believe in doing this the old-fashioned way. Get out a journal, go buy a journal if you need to, get a pen or a pencil, and really put together what this picture looks like for you. What is a typical day? Do you thrive on seeing 6 or 7 clients a week? A day. Do you see yourself doing public speaking events once a week? How many clients would you like to see, and when would you like to see them? This is one area of my own vision that I'm still evolving. My goal is to be home with my kids every evening, unless it's by choice not to be there. And I still work late one evening a week, and I see clients a couple Saturdays a month. And that's the part of my vision that I'm still working on. How do I move those clients so that I'm not seeing clients in the evenings or weekends? What services are you going to offer your clients? How much are you going to charge? What rave reviews are your clients going to say about you? And this is not, maybe you've already gotten these, if so, great, but what do you imagine them saying? What do you imagine that they're going to say to you? And how do you see yourself responding to that, because you know that you've provided a real transformation for them? So be as specific as possible. And then what's really essential is, don't lose this. Don't lose this picture, because this is the picture that is going to carry you through when things don't go your way, when you encounter obstacles. I had a day last week when I had 4 clients cancel. I had four clients scheduled and I had four clients cancel. And it's so unheard of for me to have clients cancel, especially four in a day. But if I were a new therapist or if I were a struggling therapist, I would have been panicky. What's going on? And I don't have any clients, and how am I going to pay my rent? But I know, I trust that there are more clients coming, and it was a bizarre kind of a day, and I was very grateful for all of my experiences leading up to that because I could just kind of take it in stride and not feel anxious or concerned about it. Once you have this vision for yourself, I want you to make a commitment to yourself that you are going to spend 10 minutes every day playing a movie of this. Picture yourself in that beautiful, luxurious office, if that's your vision, wearing exactly the right outfit with the right accessories, and picture your ideal clients. Just make it all so vivid. Picture them leaving your office happy. Picture them writing a big check to you because they're happy to pay your $250 an hour set up fees. Whatever it is, let this become really concrete, really vivid, and you've got to stick with it. You already know that. You've got to repeat it over the course of the next 30 days so that it becomes really solidified for you. So that's the first step of the formula, vision. I want to move next into mindset. This is the one that, frankly, was probably the biggest struggle for me when I was getting started in practice, because this is the stuff you don't realize it's a problem until it's a problem. And very often, you will think that you don't either have the right skills, or you don't have the right clients, or you don't have the right market, and that's what's holding you back. But in actuality, what I've found very often is you just don't have the right mindset. Vision is about knowing where you're going. Mindset is having the complete confidence in your ability to get there. Mindset affects therapists in many different ways, but I'll tell you a couple of obstacles that I see in particular. The biggest obstacle is therapists having an insurance-based practice because you don't believe that your clients will pay cash for your services. This is a big deal. I worked with a therapist last year who had been in practice for 16 years, and she had been in managed care for all of those years, and she was just burnt out. She wasn't enjoying it anymore. She was seeing 27 or 28 clients a week, and she was done. And she was so good. I mean, this is the woman, you would just meet her and you just wanted to tell her your problems. She just had this incredible energy about her. And when I proposed to her that clients would pay her to work with her, it was so foreign to her. Even she didn't even feel like she could ask for $80 an hour because she had never in all of her years of practice made that much. And I just thought that it was so sad that this woman, who clearly had such an incredible gift and had so much to offer, didn't believe she could even get $80. Now, that's clearly a mindset issue. Very often, being on insurance panels is a mindset issue. Sometimes it's a skill issue because you have no idea how to get clients, but very often it's a, I don't really know that clients will call me, and that's the mindset piece of it. That kind of goes hand in hand with the next obstacle, which is not valuing that what you have to offer is really worth $200 an hour. This is a place that you have to get to, that you are making a real transformation in people's lives. And what is the value of that transformation? And how are they going to get there without you? If you're, let's say, you're doing work with couples, what is the cost of a divorce? The emotional, financial, social, spiritual, physical cost of a divorce. It's tremendous. There are kids involved very often. And if you can help prevent that divorce, don't you think that's worth, I don't know, $250 an hour? So start to think about what is the value that you provide to your clients. Another more sneaky obstacle that might tell you your mindset is a problem is when you are great at creating plans for yourself. This is my yearly plan. These are my goals. This is my monthly plan. This is what I'm going to get done today. And then nothing happens. If you're not implementing on your plans, it might be that you don't have a lot of discipline, but it may also be that your mindset is sabotaging you. So be really careful to look at, are you accomplishing what you want to accomplish? And if not, get real honest with yourself about why you're not. The next one is, and I get this from Marianne Williamson, some of you may be familiar with it. If you're asking yourself, who am I to fill in the blank? Who am I to be an expert? Who am I to charge a lot of money? Who am I to go stand on a stage and speak to 200 people? For many of you, for me for a long time, it was, who am I to write a book? And I'm so excited because I now have two published books and I'm thrilled with that. So if you're saying, who am I to do this? That is clearly a mindset issue. And in the Marianne Williamson quote, where she says, you know, the world needs you. You are called on to shine your brightest because doing that elevates everyone around you. And I can tell you that nobody is ever going to come up and give you permission to be or do something. You need to give yourself permission to do that. I see fear holds so many therapists back from reaching their full potential. I see this in large part connected with how we're trained. You know, we spend our whole training getting the blessing of professors, getting the blessing of the licensing board, getting the blessing of our supervisors, getting the blessing of an agency. And we're trained to look for approval from somebody who's senior to us, somebody who's expert to us. When you're licensed, that all goes away. You have to learn to give yourself the approval, to say to yourself, I can do this. I am qualified to do this. And you have to really break that mindset. You can't continue to have that training mindset once you're in private practice. Obviously, we need that mindset when we're doing important clinical work. And in the beginning, we don't know what the heck we're doing. We need our professors, we need our mentors, we need our supervisors to make sure that we're doing a good job and not doing damage to our clients. But when you get it onto the business building side, that model just doesn't work. It will hold you back in a way that you're waiting for approval, and there's nobody that can give you that approval. That's got to come from yourself. It also comes from how you give yourself permission to reach your full potential. And I'm going to read a quote here from Seth Godin, who, if you have not read any of his books, I really do recommend that you go read all of them because he's just brilliant. If you have to pick one, I would pick one called The Icarus Deception. And I'm going to give you a quote from The Icarus Deception here. Seth Godin says, "The opportunity of a lifetime is to pick yourself. Quit waiting to get picked. Quit waiting for someone to give you permission. Quit waiting for someone to say you are officially qualified and pick yourself. It doesn't mean you have to be an entrepreneur or a freelancer, but it does mean you stand up and say, I have something to say. I know I need to do it with you. Raise your hand." And I have to tell you that when I first read that quote in The Icarus Deception, I got chills, and I immediately put the book down and I went to my laptop and I opened it up and I started writing a book because I had had a book in me for so long and I just didn't have permission. I was waiting for someone to pick me. I was waiting for somebody to say, "Jennifer, you are qualified to write a book." And then I realized I was going to be 87 and nobody will have said that yet. And I realized that every single published author had to pick themselves. They had to say, "I'm going to do this. I have something to say and I'm going to do this." And once I read that quote, my first book was done within 30 days and I just needed that. And you have the same power if you pick yourself. And so it's picking yourself to get started, and then it's also recognizing the process. Zig Ziglar has this great quote that says, failure is not a person, failure is an event. And you will have nearly as many failures as you do successes. That's a fact of life. Embrace it so that you don't freak out when failure happens. You need to understand you're going to make mistakes. Those mistakes are going to cost you time. They're going to cost you money. And if you get hung up on them, you're going to derail yourself from your vision. So when you make a mistake, you can do what I used to do, which is say, I might not be cut out for this. I guess other people can do it, but not me. And then you can close your practice or go on insurance panels or go work for an agency. Or you can do what I had to learn the hard way to do, which is say, okay, I blew it. It cost a lot of money. It cost money that I didn't afford to lose, but I lost it anyway. And so what am I going to learn from this? And how do I move on? I come from a military family, and in the military, they have something called after action reports. And you sit down and you look at what went well, what went poorly, what are we going to learn from this, and what are we going to do differently? And what I've come to realize is if you can do that and you can gain something from the experience, then it wasn't really a mistake at all. It was part of the path. So don't expect that this is going to be a smooth sail, because I'm going to tell you right now, it's not. It's up and back and up and back and up and back. And success, when it comes, is not going to look like you thought it was. But by sticking it out through the failures, you're going to ultimately end up in the success. To make your vision a success, you need to replace this, I hope I can make it work, or I'm not sure if I can do this, with I am going to figure out what it takes to be successful. When I had that day last week and I had 4 clients cancel, I said, how am I going to replace those 4 clients? What am I going to do? And I picked up the phone and I called a few stragglers. I'm sure you know these people. You're kind of sort of done with therapy, but you haven't officially wrapped up and, you know, you get near the end. And I called and I got 4 people that I said, let's come in. We're going to do a wrap-up session. And I filled it with 4 new sessions because I didn't say, oh no, what am I going to do? I said, how am I going to make this work? And by taking that how am I going to make this work attitude, you're going to figure out solutions because you're going to have that solution-oriented mindset rather than that victim kind of mentality. Notice I haven't said at all, if you encounter failure, if you make mistakes, you will experience failure, you will make mistakes. And you might even want to write that down and put it on your desk somewhere so that when it happens, you're not surprised. Don't blame yourself. Don't be critical of yourself. Just acknowledge it was coming. Here it is. There will be more in the future. And how do you move through this one? Okay, so now you've got the vision and you've got the skills in place, or excuse me, the vision and the mindset in place. Let's talk about skills. Skills is the real how-to piece. I'm going to guess that most of you have really exceptional clinical skills in your area of expertise. I'm going to guess that when it comes time to get your CEUs every 2 years, you start looking for clinical training. When it comes time to go to workshops, you start looking for clinical workshops. Because that's what fascinates us, right? We're therapists. We're fascinated by the latest research on depression. We're fascinated on the connection between autism and viruses, I don't, whatever it is. And that's what we love. And so that's what we get really good at. But I'm going to suggest to you that you need to spend at least the same amount of time improving your marketing and practice building skills. In fact, this is the easiest part of the formula to change. I imagine that every single one of you listening to this recording has at least a master's level education, if not a doctorate degree. I know that you can learn the skills that you need to build a 6-figure practice. I have absolutely no question about that. I know that you've probably never been taught those skills. If you have been taught them, you've learned them kind of piecemeal, a little bit here, a little bit there. Let me try this and see if it works. Let me try that and see if it works. I often call this hope marketing. Gosh, I hope this gets me some clients, or gosh, I hope the phone rings. And hope marketing is a very expensive way to build the practice. What is much better is to invest in developing really a comprehensive marketing system. Without this, no one's going to know how good your clinical skills are because you're not going to have an opportunity to share your message with the world. Clients are not magically going to know that you exist. They're going to have to find out about you, and there's only one way for them to do that, and that's by practice building. Now, hopefully, not all of you have turned off this recording as soon as I said practice building, because I know that that's a dirty word for a lot of people, and you need to think about that. If practice building is a big turnoff for you, what was your expectation in private practice? If you are that reluctant to do any practice building, you need to ask yourself whether there's a mindset issue, or is private practice really truly your calling? You will not have a six-figure private practice without a concerted, systematic effort at practice building and marketing. Yes, you are going to have to put your message out in front of the world. Yes, you are going to be exposed to doing new things that you've never tried before. Yes, you're going to be uncomfortable in the beginning while you get good at it. That's the reality of it. And if that reality scares the bejesus out of you, consider whether this is truly the right place for you, or if you have a mindset component that you still need to work on. So once you've gotten that piece, now you can get to work on really what are the skills that you need. And you need really I don't have time here to go in depth into all of the components that go into a comprehensive marketing program, but I want to give you the three biggies that you need to be able to be good at. So if you have to, what are the skills that I can learn that are going to make the biggest difference in my practice? Here they are. First is online. And I know if you imagine an online presence, the first thing that you think of for many of you is going to be a website. And then you're going to say, oh, I don't have a website. Or you're going to say, oh, I have a website, but I don't get any clients from it. If you have a website, great. If you don't, that's okay. Really, where it's at these days is social media. Because social media gives our potential clients a real flavor of who we are and what we have to offer and what sets us apart. I am so often surprised, let's say it happens probably 3 times a week, when a client in session that I'm talking with will say, oh my gosh, I just loved that picture that you posted yesterday. Or, yes, I had the same thing on my wall. Our clients, they're out there and they're trolling our sites. Even if they're not posting, even if they're not liking, even if they're not interacting, they're out there trolling. And I think even more importantly is our potential clients are out there trolling. So you need to have a social media presence. I believe this is much more important than having a static website. If you want to have a static website, great, knock yourself out, go do it. But I don't recommend that you do that until you have your social media presence down. For therapists, social media is Facebook is really where you should be investing most of your time and energy. It's having a specific Facebook page and then maintaining that page, providing useful, valuable information to your clients, responding to comments, being active in the Facebook community. If you don't already have this, I have a tremendous amount of social media resources on my website, thrivingtherapypractice.com. Go out and take a look. You'll find some really good things. You can even download my free Facebook marketing guide to get yourself up to speed on social media. If you have Facebook working pretty well, and you know it's working pretty well because you're having activity on your page, you're having clients mention it, you're having potential clients mention it, then you know that you've got Facebook worked out. Then I would switch to LinkedIn and I would work on that. That should not be your first priority, but Facebook and LinkedIn. And then if you find yourself with time on your hands and those are both working, now it's time to work on a static website. And this is important so that people can go out and again get to know you a little bit. The best way for them to get to know you on your website is through a blog. So if you're going to do a website, it needs to be updated regularly with a blog. This is not only important for your readers, but it's also essential for search engine optimization. And I'm not going to go into all the details here, but it really hurts your Google rankings if your page is not updated. It really helps your Google rankings if you can be updated 3 or 4 times a week. Blogs are the best way to do that. So that's the online presence, a little overview there. The next one is connection building and relationship building. Some of you may have heard of this referred to as networking. I do my absolute best to avoid the word networking because I know that you all hate it. However, connection building or relationship building is a really powerful, powerful way to build clients. Now, I'm not asking you to go out to those Chamber of Commerce luncheons anymore unless you love them. If you love them and they work for you, keep doing it. Don't mess with it. If you dread them as much as I dread them, and if you are as horrible at them as I used to be, then please, right this moment, make a commitment to yourself that you are done. Because the reality is, they're usually not a great source of referrals for us. And there are so many more powerful ways for us to spend our time. So again, if you like those networking meetings and you've made them work for you, great, keep doing them. If you dread them, and you sit out in the parking lot before you go in saying, please, I don't want to go in, then you're done. Just give yourself permission to take it off your plate. Really, think of this as connection building. Let me give you an example of a networking experience that just happened to me this afternoon, okay? I was meeting with a family law attorney, and she said to me, I'm looking for an insurance agent and a real estate agent that I can potentially partner with, because when people get divorced, they often call a realtor to sell their home before the divorce is final. Or same thing with insurance, they'll be changing insurance. And so they're both great referral sources for me. And I said to her, I've got a top-notch real estate agent for you to call, and I have a top-notch insurance agent for you to call. And I connected her with the insurance agent and with the real estate agent. And that's the type of connection building that I'm thinking about here. So this isn't just going out and handing out business cards. That never works. It's about how do you build relationships with people. So here's what I always recommend for building connections, building relationships. First is reaching out to organizations that are looking for speakers in your area of expertise. And then, again, this is only if you see yourself speaking, which I think all of us should be, but not everybody wants to. So if you're focusing on, let's say, hypnotherapy for weight loss, it would be great to reach out to gyms, to yoga studios, to medi spas. Who are the people that could really value this? And asking yourself, what do I have to offer them? What are they looking for? See, when I met with this family law attorney today, we all know what I wanted, right? I want her to refer clients to me. Absolutely. But what I really needed to do before I could ask her for clients is to say, how can I be of value to her? What does she need and how can I offer that? That's what connection building is all about. That's what relationship building is all about. So ask yourself, for instance, when you get the name of somebody that you think could be a referral source, what could I have to offer this person that would make me a valuable contact to them? Another very important type of connection building is to be active on blogs and social media. So if there's somebody that you want to get to know, for instance, there's an author that I really admire. Her name is Glennon Melton, and she just wrote a book called Carry On Warrior, and she runs a website called Momastery. Now, it's my dream to be a guest blogger on Momastery. She's on my target list of people that I would love to get to know. And I'm not even on her radar. She doesn't even know that I exist. But I'm active on her social media pages, and I'm active commenting on her blogs, and I'm building a presence in her site. She's responded to a couple of my comments, so she's getting familiar with me. And as I develop that online relationship, now I have some connection with her that I can move to an offline relationship. So think about who are the people that you would love to connect with, reporters, anybody that could possibly give you some publicity, anybody that you would like to have a connection with, and how do you begin an online relationship with them and then translate it into a real world relationship. Again, a social media presence, you will have, and if you're already online with Facebook, you may already know this, you will have a lot of lurkers. You're going to have people that don't want to like your page because they don't want to be associated with a therapist, but they're there and they're paying attention, and for you to be active is really important. And the last one that I'm going to give you is care coordination, which is follow up with anyone that refers to you. Care coordination, when I was in the stage where I was really, really having to seek out clients, I needed cash fast. Care coordination was the biggest, most effective strategy for me, and it was connecting with the referral source. Or even if the physician did not refer the client, connecting with the physician to let them know that their patient was under my care. That was a really powerful way of getting referrals. And then the last major skill area that you need to get in, and this is if you're an existing practice, if you have clients, you could do this and nothing else, and I promise that you would fill your practice. This is about maximizing the value of the relationships with the clients you already have or the clients that you have had in the past. This is my biggest fear as a therapist. You may have heard this before. I have clients come in my office and, you know, marriage counseling, they've often done it before. So when did you have marriage counseling? It was maybe 3 years ago. Who did you see? Oh, gosh, I don't remember. It was some guy. Oh, he wasn't too far from here. Gosh, I don't know. Was it helpful? Oh, yeah, we liked him a lot. And why did you not go back to him? Well, we can't remember his name. And I don't ever want to be the one that is being referred to as, we can't remember her name. We liked her. She really helped us, but we can't remember her name. And you don't want your clients to say that to either. So how are you staying in touch with your clients? How are you remaining connected with them even when you're no longer currently seeing them? I will often hear therapists refer to past clients or closed clients. Can I just ask you right now to take closed clients out of your lexicon? You are never going to refer to a client again as closed, because this is somebody that you want to maintain an ongoing, lifelong relationship with. You helped them with their kids' temper tantrums when they were three. Don't you want them to call you with ADHD at 8 or acting out behavior at 13? Don't you want to be that family's resource, that trusted advisor that they can turn to? Don't presume that they're going to remember you, no matter how much they loved you. Don't presume that. So always think about how can you maximize the value of what you have to offer to your current clients, because they are the people most likely to give you more money. So could this be a workshop? I offer workshops maybe every 6 or 8 weeks, and most of them are filled up by my current clients. Now, we're already doing therapy together. I don't know how much more of me they can stand, but they come and they do a workshop, and you know, it's a different format because they're learning a lot of specific skills. So workshops are a great way to maximize value. I also offer some what you may hear referred to as information products. For instance, I sell something called Meditation for a Happy Marriage. And it's great for people that they're just so mad at their spouse that they can't do the therapy work. So I tell them that they've got to go work on their attitude and they've got to download this and get to work on visualizing. It's a visualization exercise. They've got to get to work on visualizing a different relationship before they can really truly invest in change. The next category to think about are past clients. So how are you staying in touch with people that already know, like, and trust you? What are you doing to stay on their radar screen so that when a problem arises, they know just who to call? Or when their girlfriend calls them and says, "Gosh, my daughter is having these terrible mood swings, and I think she might be on drugs. Do you know a therapist I can talk to?" You can say, the client will say, "I sure do. Let me give you her number and her email address." So it's being on the radar screen of past clients because they can be wonderful referral sources. Which brings me then to referrals. If you've been in practice for more than 2 years, I would say at least half of your new clients should come to you by referrals. If that's not the case, then you are not building in a referral culture, and you're not educating people on how to send referrals to you. You're not making it seem like part of the process, and you're not helping to alleviate the stigma that they might have. So if you're new in practice, understand that you've got to be making it easy. You've got to be encouraging your clients to send you referrals. If you've been in practice for a long period of time and you're not getting referrals, you need to look at what you're doing that's missed the mark. It might be that this is a clinical issue and that clients are not comfortable referring to you for whatever reason, that the therapy was not what they wanted it to be. And you need to be honest with yourself about that too, because that's something that's relatively easy to fix, and then you can go on your way with getting referrals again. But don't expect that just because somebody loves you, they're going to refer clients to you. It doesn't work like that. You need to educate them and you need to encourage them to send you referrals. Then only if you've exhausted those three things, current clients, past clients, and referrals, only then should you waste a penny trying to get new clients. And the problem with new clients is that they're really, really expensive. You have to do a lot of ineffective marketing in order to figure out what is actually going to work. Chances are you don't have a lot of money to experiment with right now. So you need to make the most of every single dime that you invest in marketing. So the biggest marketing investment you can make is with current clients. The next most productive is with past clients. The next most productive is referrals. And only then should you try to go do online marketing, paid advertising in a magazine, any of that kind of stuff. That all comes to the very end. So with skills, I've walked you through the three big areas that you're going to get clients from, keeping in touch with clients. I walked you through how to get online and how to maximize your online presence, and I walked through connection building. That is by no means an exhaustive list of the skills of marketing, but it's going to give you a taste of where you need to start and what you can really focus on if those are not areas that you have a lot of skill in right now. So let's move to the last section of the formula, which is implementation. And as I said earlier, implementation is where the rubber hits the road. And it is the actually sitting down and making yourself do something. It's really easy when you start something new. You're all excited and you have a lot of enthusiasm and you're working until late in the night and you're working on Saturdays and you're so excited about this. And then you lose your enthusiasm. And it's really easy to lose your focus. Implementation is about doing it, whether you feel like it or not. And what I had to learn about myself is that I was a great starter. I mean, nobody would start with all of my enthusiasm and energy. And then, I would kind of lose interest, and then I would get a new idea, and I would be full of excitement for the new idea, and I would just take off running with that, and the first idea just kind of languished. But I wasn't enthusiastic about it anymore, and so what I would do is hop from one great idea to another great idea, never actually getting any one of them through to completion, and then wondering why I wasn't having any clients. So implementation, this is self-discipline, and I know as a therapist, I probably shouldn't say that. I should probably talk to you about things other than self-discipline, but as a person, I just believe it's about, I'm going to write 5,000 words a day, and I'm not going to get up until I've done that. I'm going to spend 20 minutes with social media networking, and I'm not going to stop until I do. I'm going to send an email once a week to all of my clients, and it's going to be a habit whether I feel like it or not. This is what I call stick-to-itiveness that I think is the difference between the floundering practice with all good intentions and the six-figure practice that is just blowing the roof off the joint. The implementation starts with your very firm, unwavering commitment of time to yourself. We're really good at committing time to our clients. We're really good at committing time to our families. We're really good at committing time to our church. We're good at committing time to a lot of things, but are we good at committing time to ourselves? You need to be good at committing time to yourself. And if your practice is a mess right now, it's either a mess because you're just starting out, or it's a mess because you haven't nurtured it the way you need to, I think you're going to have to commit 10 hours a week. And that probably sounds pretty scary, although if your schedule is not full of clients, you may have 10 free hours a week. If you are in maintenance mode, you can probably get away with 3 or 4 hours a week. If you're in, I'm going okay, you know, I see maybe 10 clients a week, I want to bump it up to 15, then probably about 5 hours a week. Between my practice building for my private practice and my working with other therapists through Thriving Therapy Practice, I spend about 5 hours a week on marketing. Now, I work about 22 hours a week right now, so I spend a big portion of my time marketing. You may not spend that much of your time marketing, but if your practice is floundering, I would encourage you to spend as much as you possibly can. Now, here's the key to this. It's not enough to say that you're going to spend 3 hours or 5 hours. You have to take your calendar and you have to block that time out. Because a client is going to say to you, can I see you Wednesday at 9? And you're going to want to say, of course you can, come on in. And then that time is gone. You just lost that hour. And you are not going to commit to the level that you need to. So I know you're going to hate it, but you've got to say, I'm not seeing clients during these hours. I am building my practice. I'm investing in myself. I am taking my practice to the next level. The six-figure therapists that I have coached all have a structured time. I don't see clients on Wednesdays. I don't see clients this time. Whatever it is, I can tell you that the highly successful therapists invest in themselves week after week after week. You cannot skimp on that. Now, the way I do this, I got this idea from Laura Langmire. She talks about what are those ideas that scare you? And they're really going to take you to the next level. My mentor, Allie Brown, has said up-level. What are the ideas that are going to up-level you? These are the ideas that scare you. And I think every single day you should take some action toward one of these big ideas. Something that scares you, that you don't really know that you're qualified for, but you're going to go do it anyway. Writing a book, going on television, being interviewed on the radio, raising your rates, whatever it is that pushes you outside your comfort zone, commit to take action on it every single day. And then the other idea that has made a tremendous difference for me is by Brian Tracy, also, I really recommend anything that he's written. And he talks about eating the frog first. And eating the frog first means get your most dreaded task out of the way. Often, what you dread the most is the high-value task. Get it out of the way first so that you have a sense of accomplishment. The day is bound to get easier by then because whatever you really dreaded is now done. It's now behind you. Once you've made that commitment to yourself in terms of time and energy, and once you have gotten a schedule together of how you're going to do this, now the implementation piece is going to be systematic, and you'll just know what you're going to be doing each day, what you're going to be doing each week, and it gets a lot easier. When you don't have a system in place, it is very difficult to implement. Okay, so those are the four pieces, and you're probably already, as you're listening to this, saying, okay, I'm good here, I'm mediocre there, this one I suck at, who knows what it is, but you are probably giving yourself a little commentary. I've included in the book, which in case you're listening to this while you drive, I'm going to go through it again now. I want you to ask yourself I want you to rate yourself on a scale of one to, to rate yourself with a yes or no for each of these things so that you get a feel for what you're good at and what you need to work on. The first set of questions that I'm going to do are vision questions. And I want you to count how many yeses you have, okay? Question number one, I have a clear picture of my ideal private practice. Question number two, I know what sets me apart from other therapists. Question number three, I dedicate time each day to visualize and write out my goals. Question number four, I'm an expert at what I do. Clients should want to seek me out. That's it for the visualization category. So how many yeses did you get? Are you clear in your vision? If you didn't get a lot of yeses, then you need to work on this a little bit more. The next set of questions are mindset questions. And again, ask yourself yes or no to these. I know of other therapists who are successful in their practices. I believe I am capable of having a six-figure private practice. I charge what I'm worth for my work. I deserve to be prosperous as a therapist. I keep myself focused on my goals even when setbacks occur. How many yeses did you get in that section? Is mindset something that you need work on? The next category is skills. Ask yourself how many yeses you get in this section. I have a formal marketing plan for my practice. I have invested in my marketing and practice building skills. I know exactly which actions to take to attract new clients. I have a consistent system for staying in touch with current, past, and potential clients. I have an active, engaging online presence through social media and/or a current blog. So how many yeses there? Is this an area that you're good in? And then the last category is implementation. I dedicate at least 3 hours a week to marketing my practice. I invest in practice building activities even when I'm not really in the mood. I am engaged in the community through speaking engagements, networking, and public relations. I am willing to take risks and try new things even if they might not work. I am committed to my private practice being successful. I go the extra mile to accomplish my goals. So how many yeses there in that area? And that should give you a pretty good idea of what areas you're strong in and what areas you need to work in. And if, as you listen to this, you've identified a particular area that you need to work in, or you've realized that generally across the board you need to strengthen areas, I invite you to get in touch with me. I invite you to check out the resources on my website and to contact me to see if I can be helpful to you in any of those areas. My website again is thrivingtherapypractice.com. www.marriagefamilyfoundation.com. And if you'd like to arrange a free consultation with me to see if I can be of help in helping you get to your own six-figure private practice, you can email me at jennifer@jennifersneedon.com, and I will get back to you, and we can arrange a time, and I will do my best to help you reach your six-figure private practice. Thank you all once again for purchasing the book. This is Jennifer Sneedon, founder of Thriving Therapy Practice, and I wish you your greatest success.